You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find it on Twitter at Locked On Cavs or on Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. You can find today's first guest on Twitter at David Zavocki, the writer at ForTheSword. David, how's it going?
Hey, doing good. Happy to be here. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we're going to start with the weekly column section check-in, and Dave and I are going to get into what I think has been, I would say, David, and tell me if you disagree, but I think this has been the most, it's a very small sample size, that's the caveat here, but Colin Sexton as a starter, I think, has been more encouraging than he has been at any point to me. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's helped by playing with more competent players. The team as a whole seems to be in like a healthier place. I don't know how much of that's Larry Drew or what, but yeah, I mean, I think in terms of his efficiency and the way he seems comfortable with getting the shots that he wants right now, it's certainly a lot better, and he's also just not getting caught up in Jordan Clarkson, you know, minutes to the extent that he had been. And I think if you looked at the game logs, you know, one of his best games, he had had a really good first half, and then Jordan Clarkson actually had a nice second half as well. And, you know, Colin kind of got lost in things a little bit. I don't know if that was, I think it was that Oklahoma City game. And so it just sort of highlights the importance of trying to separate those guys as much as possible. But to give Colin a little bit more freedom and the ability to handle the ball.
So I think the biggest thing for me that has looked better is he has just looked a bit more confident and aggressive in what he's doing. I don't think he's quite... He obviously, because he's a rookie, and for the year, he's averaging more turnovers per game than assists. So he's like not the court vision and the distribution part of his game is just not there yet. Even when he's played better, it's just not there. But I like that he's not just driving in, taking mid-range shots. I like that he's been taking threes and just looking a little more comfortable doing so. And I like that he's getting to the rim a bit more, even if he's not quite, you know, finishing exactly at the clip you sort of want him to if he kind of is his best version of himself. But I've liked that he's played sort of more aggressively, more comfortably. And maybe that is the fact that he's not playing with Jordan Clarkson. Like, maybe it's just the fact that Colin Sexton is no longer playing with a guy who basically forces him to play off ball and play a role that he's never played before, to my knowledge, or did it all at Alabama. I think just there's probably some really positive residual effect that has made him look better. And I also think like that has to continue. Whenever George Hill is back, whenever this team is fully healthy again, I do think that that has to be a priority for Larry Drew, is finding a way to make that happen regardless of what kind of decision he makes as far as Sexton continuing to start or starting with Hill or if he goes back to the bench.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's a little frustrating because, I mean, he's average. You look at his numbers and he's, you know, shooting 50% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from the free throw line, which I think is actually very encouraging. And yet he still sort of has this average to below average for his position, true shooting rate. His player efficiency rating is still at 11. Not that, you know, I'm going to give an unqualified endorsement of player efficiency rating, but you know, for a guy that sort of attempts to do the things that maybe player efficiency rating would overrate, for him to have a lower number there is, I think, a little disappointing. You mentioned the turnovers to assist rate. That's all problematic, but he's not playing He's all right. We're all familiar with my dog Squeaky Toy. That was his non-squeaky toy that he's throwing
to the guy who only tweets at me when David's on the podcast. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, I apologize. I thought we would really be fine here. But no, I mean, I think if he was playing with shooters, if he was playing with Love, and he was playing with competent players, I think we'd feel even better. But I think he's taken some steps forward. And I think the big thing that I worry about is his ball handling. But I think we forget that, you know, a year and a half ago, he was playing without a shot clock. And all of a sudden, now it's a 24-second shot clock. Things are really sped up for him. You know, he's gone from a 40-minute game to a 48-minute game. He's being asked to do things defensively he's never been asked to do. So I think some patience is in order.
The Kevin Love factor in this is something that I think we have to emphasize and probably hasn't been talked about enough. Kevin Love is like going to help Colin Sexton. Kevin Love is going to help Jiddy Osman. Kevin Love is going to help everybody because he's by far the best player that the Cavs have. He's by far the best offensive player the Cavs have, and he can take a lot of the pressure off these guys and create some better looks for them. I cannot say that enough, that like this team really just misses what Kevin Love he's supposed to provide. And I don't think he was quite healthy to start the year. But I think when he gets back, it's going to help with Sexton. I think it'll help with everybody. But we're getting to a point where George Hill is going to be back soon-ish. Like it seems like this week would be kind of the time frame. You know, Larry Drew said 2 days ago that Colin Sexton is making it tough for him to say, I'm going to start George Hill when he returns. My personal preference would be to find a way to start Hill and Sexton. I understand how tough that is because I don't think Jetty should play the four. I don't think he's bulky enough. I don't think Rodney should play the four. So I don't know what the right solution here is. But I feel like Colin Sexton should just continue to start. I think just as a rookie, he's doing the kind of stuff you'd hope he does. He's the future of your franchise far more than George Hill is, who's he's here to mentor people and be a trade asset. That's to be cynical about it, that's like what he is. And I just don't know if you can go back, you can put him back. And maybe if you could find a way to play him more minutes without starting him, that I could be okay with it. But I think he has to start. I think just find a way to do it and find a way that it's not going to piss off someone, even though it probably is. But Colin Sexton should be your priority. And maybe that makes him look worse in the locker room. But Larry Drew has already gone out of his way to defend him once in the media. I get the sense that he understands he needs to protect Sexton a little bit right now. I would continue to start him. I think you have to.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like those football debates that you hear, like, once you go to the rookie quarterback, you can't bench him, because then when you bench him, it's like you've broken his confidence to some. And I've never really understood why that made sense. I mean, you play him hoping he's ready, and if he's not, you give him more time on the bench or whatever. But, I think he needs to start not because Colin Sexton has earned it or because it's you know, it's because he's played so well that you can't bench him. I think he needs to start because it's a 2-12 team and he's one of your young players and you don't have very many of them. And if you did not tear down, right, and they didn't, they've kept George Hill, they kept Kevin Love, they kept Tristan Thompson. The whole benefit, theoretically, of not tearing down and keeping those guys is to have guys who can then help your players, you know, develop and grow. And, you know, again, you know, it goes back to, you know, maybe some of the conversations we had at the beginning of the year where start George Hill, start Colin Sexton, start Chetty Osman, you know, start Kevin Love, you know, put some shooters and some competent players around Chetty Osman and Colin Sexton, because those are the two guys that you're trying to build with. And, you know, I guess if we've learned something so far, it's unfortunately that, you know, does anybody really want to invest in Rodney Hood moving forward in terms of, like, prioritizing his minutes? I just don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the answer is yes. But for now, I'm not really ready to invest a whole lot of time and emphasis on him.
He's the guy that Rodney Hood is the guy that I think has the most sort of that could he could be ruffled the most here because he like has a lot on the line this season in terms of money and him playing well. So I wonder how he would take like maybe being bumped to start Hill and Sexton. David, we'll wrap it up on two questions. I just want a quick answer. Number one, what is your optimal starting once everyone aside from Kevin Love is healthy? What would your starting five be with assuming and if Colin Sexton's in it? Yes or no. Number two. This week, the Cavs play the Detroit Pistons, the LA Lakers, who have like that LeBron guy or whatever, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Houston Rockets. What game are you most looking forward to seeing Colin Sexton play in this week?
I don't think it matters yet in terms of who he is playing against. I just think it's all about getting him comfortable. So, I'm not even like watching, you know, people got really invested in that, you know, Colin Sexton, John Wall matchup. And I think it's cool that like he's learning what, you know, it was a game that Wall was actually engaged in and trying really hard. I think it's good for Colin Sexton to see what that looks like and to get embarrassed a couple times. I think that's good for him. But for the most part, it's just Colin Sexton, you know, learning where Tristan Thompson's going to be on a pick and roll coverage or, you know, learning, you know, how Kyle Korver's going to feel out, you know, an offensive set or something like that. So I'm not looking at Colin Sexton in terms of in numbers, really, or although, you know, you don't want to see bad ones, really, but you're just trying to get him ready for just seeing different things because this is his first time through the league and we'll get to a point where, you know, he's never played an 82 game season before. So you want to see how he's holding up durability wise. But I don't care too much about the matchups just yet. In terms of a perfect starting five for him, I would say George Hill, Colin Sexton, Kyle Korver, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson. I think, you know, in a perfect world, in a healthy world, that doesn't exist right now. So in terms of what they have available, probably Colin Sexton, Chetty Osman, Rodney Hood, Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson, and you know they're going to have to grind it out a little bit, but you just want to see players who know what they're doing out there with Kevin Love or with Colin Sexton. I feel like
I think that's fair. I'll just say my lineup is when everyone is healthy, it's Hill, Osman, because I still want the development, Love and Thompson, and then I would just swap in, I guess. Go Hood for Love right now just because, or maybe Nawaba just because I want the defender on there. But I would say for me, the game this week is just the Houston game because I just want to see how he handles the fourth game in a long week where he plays a decent team in Detroit. He gets the Lakers and the environment that happens there. Then he gets the day after Thanksgiving, gets the weird cross-matching that Philly provides. And then he gets Houston, who has the point guard and has James Harden. I just want to see how he handles like what is maybe the toughest game for him one-on-one at the end of a long week. I just want to see like what that experience is like for him and what he has to maybe... He won't say very much because he's not a very talkative guy with us post-game, but I just want to see kind of how he reacts to all that. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about one of the guys we've mentioned a couple of times here, the one and only Tristan Thompson, a favorite of David Davok. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. And we're back. So David, Tristan Thompson, I'm just going to say he's been really good this year. Probably the best Cav this year. Just has looked healthy, looks spry, looks mobile. What stands out to you in terms of what Tristan has been in his maybe the best he's looked since the 16 finals? Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, he's been good enough that I went from being sort of pleasantly surprised with what he's done to like actually feeling some regret, like, wow, like maybe in the 2017 finals, if he was a little bit more healthy, maybe he gets them in the game a little bit. You know, I don't know. I mean, they were a really good team in 2017 and the Warriors were just on a different level. And I think, you know, the way Kevin Durant played, probably nothing really mattered, but you know, we saw what kind of difference Tristan could make in 2016. And even in the first two games of the 2015 finals, before Draymond really got going in that series. I'll digress even further. I went back the other day and just tried to find some of my early articles on him because I was just kind of curious what I had said. And there was an article from, I think, early in the 2013 season. That ended up being a pretty disappointing. It was the year before LeBron came back. And I basically had found over the first 2 months of that season that the Cavs were like 0-8 when Tristan played under 30 minutes. And they were like 7-6 when Tristan played over 30 minutes. And the basic idea was, you didn't really know when you were going to get good Tristan, but when you did and he really played significant minutes and he was at his best, the Cavs even then were like a pretty good team. And, you look at when the Cavs were able to win the championship, he was at his best. He was always sort of the different, one of those guys that could push you from being really good to title contender, just one of those role players that when he was a superstar as a role player was really helpful. And I had no idea how he would come into this season, whether he would be upset that he was, sort of left behind or what, but he's playing with energy and he, like I said, he looks healthy and seems to have the right attitude about everything. And he's a great Cavalier and I hope everybody values it, because he could be traded tomorrow, and that would make sense in a way. He's sort of playing himself into it, but I like having him here now.
I cannot say enough of what I think. He's obviously been the best player. He's rebounding well. He's doing all this stuff really well. I think his presence in the locker room is like maybe the most positive thing that he's doing right now. Like on the court, he's the one coaching up guys. Even going back to last year, this was a guy that I think if you just look at the film, he made Larry Nance like a much better screener, because Larry Nance was bad at setting screens when he came to the Cavs. And I don't know if I want to say he's good now, but like he actually uses his body on screens now, where Tristan like was the sort of credited as the guy that did that. He's the guy that is here with, especially with Kevin Love out, especially with the JR situation. Just with Channing, Channing is in this like weird spot because we just don't seem to ever see him play. Tristan is the on-court guy that won a title, that has been through a bad situation as a team before. He was at the near the low of the low with the Cavs. He's seen a lot in his career, even though it's not like he's old by any means, but he's like seen a lot already. He's the guy that can help guide guys through this, and I don't know like where how he factors into the that Joe Varden report from a couple weeks ago that. Like, guys were frustrated with Sexton because he didn't know how to play. I don't know how he factors into that. But, like, when I'm there in the locker room, what I see and what I hear him say and what people have said to me when you're asked about him or you just chat with people, like, he's been the leader of this team. And when he's talked about stuff, he's very blunt and he's very open about sort of the fight, the need to do some things better, drawing on the experiences that he had coming up with Kyrie and then playing with LeBron. Like, you can see a guy that actually has morphed into a... and from a young NBA guy that was just finding his way, the guy you're describing, to the guy now that is an actual leader. And, like, did he develop in the way that, like, the Lee Jenkins shot, changing his hands for his shot thing, did that work out the way he wanted to? No, it obviously did not. Is he sort of still, like, limited in some ways? Yes, he has his limitations. And he's had some games this year where he misses a bunch of shots that he should be making. But he's been so much better. He's defending better again. And the way he has... I think just led this team and coached it on the floor and kind of been the guy, especially and to help them kind of muddle through this chaos, especially when the other guy doing that was George Hill and George Hill's been out. I cannot just say like enough that I think this situation like might be even worse if Tristan's not around. If he's not there to kind of like help guide them through some of this, and if it's like maybe just Channing or if it's just George Hill or like whoever, I just don't know what that looks like if it's not Tristan kind of taking on a lot of that responsibility.
Well, and historically, guys like Channing or a James Jones or, players like that, Richard Jefferson, they can't they can't lead 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds at their age with their abilities. Have they seen everything? Yes. Does the 19-year-old know that Channing Frye has been everywhere? Yes. But the simple fact of the matter is Channing Frye can't do what he had done before, and Richard Jefferson can't do what they had done before. And 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, Jordan Clarkson-year-olds, these guys are confident guys. So where a guy like Tristan Thompson is helpful is that not only has he been through everything, but he still has, at least this year it seems like, he still has the ability to like play good basketball and step up and be a physical presence. And when Colin Sexton sees Tristan talk to dudes on the court at the end of the game and sees the respect that players on other teams have for Tristan Thompson, sees the way that players on other teams talk to Tristan Thompson during the game, right? There's this catch that Tristan Thompson has that, frankly, is a little surprising because it's not like he's been like this great player or anything like that. But I do think that some of the younger guys on the Cavs have to pay attention to Tristan Thompson a little bit differently than they would for a Channing Frye. So I haven't been in the locker room like you have, but my guess would be that you're correct, because generally speaking, you know, to impress a cocky young guy, and when I say cocky young guy, I mean literally any young player in the NBA, you still have to be able to play a little bit, and Tristan's showing that he can.
We'll wrap it up on this for Tristan. Has how he's played this year changed your view on him in terms of a long-term fit on this with this group, with Sexton, with Jetty, with the likely top five pick that they're going to get in the next June's draft?
I mean, like, yes and no. I mean, on one hand, you can find my sort of half trollish tech, you know, tweets from a year ago where, you know, I pointed out that Tristan's only like a year older than Larry Nance is. And I mean, you can look at all the minutes on there. And it looked like the minutes.
Look, worth noting, Tristan like has been significantly better than Larry Nance this year.
Right. You know, and I mean, not like close. Some of the conversations that we had last year, in terms of the Cavs, you know, like trying to get to a level where even last year they could compete for a title. And of course we made it to the finals, but some of it was like, you just need Larry Nance to get to Tristan Thompson 2016 level, right? And the answer to that was yes. But, like, I don't think any of us, not very many of us, really reckoned with, like, how good that actually was. And so I think if you look at, you know, where Twitter was or where we all were in March of last year, or March of this year, the idea that Tristan Thompson is significantly better than Larry Nance would have been sort of controversial, but it just seems pretty correct right now. And that's kind of a bummer because the Cavs have invested a lot in Larry Nance, but the Cavs have also invested a lot in Tristan Thompson, and he's not super old either. So, you know, I don't know.
Tristan right now is, he's got 2 years left on his contract. So he's making just under $17.5 this year. He's going to make 18 next year. 18 and a half next year. He's 27 years old, turns 28 in March, so he'll be 29 when he hits free agency. I would not, you know, paying him like a 5-year deal for how many minutes he's played and how long he'll be in the league at that point seems like a little dicey considering what we know happens to big guys. But like especially if like Ante Zizic just like does not work out, which like the jury is very much still out on what Zizic is. Like I think there is a scenario where Tristan Thompson is like still on the roster, and it's like when you run down the guys on this roster that are not the young guys. So you look at, Kevin. That's a whole other kind of situation. But George Hill, J.R. Smith, Clarkson. Maybe they're gonna pay Clarkson. Who freaking knows at this point? Hood, because I just don't expect him to be back for a variety of reasons. Who knows about Sam Decker? Who knows about? Channing's probably done after this year. Who knows what market's going to look like next summer. Like, Tristan's sort of the one guy that, like, I look at this and I say, I can see a path. Like, him and Clarkson are sort of the two guys that I'm like, Yeah, I could kind of see them being around. It just depends on the price. And I also just would be, I don't, it depends on what the cap looks like and stuff, but like, he's probably going to get less money, I would guess, on his next deal. That's like a year away. We don't know, but, and he has to play well this year, next year to kind of be asking for more money. But I could see a scenario where he's like a 15-year Cavalier and just like spends his whole time here. But I also could see a situation where like a team panics, thinks they need what he offers as a big, and like trades a protected first for him and matches salary, and the Cavs do it because they feel like they need to. Like I think both those things seem relatively possible.
Fine to me. I specifically, my view at the time was pretty close to pay Tristan whatever he wants the last time. That being said, my view was also I felt very comfortable giving Tristan this contract, and I knew at the time that I was not going to be comfortable with his next one. So, you know, the dollars would matter. A backloaded contract, you know, or a front-loaded contract would matter so that he's making less, you know, on the back end. But I think time will just sort of let this play out. And it's, you know, I think the Cavs can be patient because he's been such a good pro, right? I mean, like, Tristan Thompson could have been bad. He could have been a jerk. And then the Cavs' timeline might have been sort of sped up on this. But they can let him be a leader. They can let him keep working. And like you said, if you know, Toronto decides that, you know, they want him for what he can do with Al Horford or whatever, but or the Lakers, you know, realize that, you know, if LeBron wants him there, I don't know. But the Cavs can be patient. And that is something that Tristan's competence has won for them almost. So I think that's good.
I 100% agree. It's going to be interesting to see how he looks the rest of the year, see if he can keep up what he's doing right now over the rest of the year, because if he can, that would be a win for him and I think for the team as well. But you can find David's writing at For the Sword. You can find him on Twitter at David Zavok. David, thanks so much.
Hey, happy to be here.
Next, we're going to take a quick break, and then you're going to hear from Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons to talk about Monday's Cavs-Pistons game in Detroit. And if you're looking for another Cavs, another Cleveland podcast to listen to, go check out Locked On Browns. Jeff Lloyd has everything covered. Even on this bye week, he's going to have some great podcasts up for you all week. So check out Locked On Browns. Put that in your rotation. And we're going to be back with more Locked On Cavs with Matt Shook from Locked On Pistons right after this. And joining me now is Matt Shook from Locked On Pistons. Matt, how's it going?
Pretty good, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. So the Cavs and Pistons played what, it, for me, it feels like a lifetime ago when Ty Lue was still the coach. There were fewer injuries. There was less drama. I think Kevin Love was still healthy, but for the Pistons, just broadly, what has this season so far been for them? What have been the high point? What are just some of the good things, some of the bad things you've seen so far covering this team?
Well, yeah, there was the four-game winning streak, which was the last of the four games to start the season, then a five-game losing streak, and then it's just been battling 500 since then. So now sitting at just over 500, 7-6, the biggest win certainly of the year, probably of a few years, on Wednesday night when they went into Toronto and beat Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors, give them their third loss of the season, were down by 19 points late in the third quarter, came back and won that game. And that was, of course, Dwayne Casey's first game back in Toronto after he got fired after winning Coach of the Year last year. So it's been a weird week. But on the other hand, there's only just been that one game. The Pistons played one game in 7 days, kind of a tough, inopportune time for that rest because maybe you wanted to build on the momentum of the Toronto win. But, you know, it's been up and down and still trying to figure out what Dwayne Casey wants to do offensively. Obviously, Blake Griffin as a post-up option is the number one option, the best option for this team, but still trying to figure out a way to knock down some three-point shots, using other ways to get that going. They got some free-flowing spread offense. The defense, it comes and goes. And Stanley Johnson, when he's playing, and like he did in the fourth quarter against Kawhi Leonard on Wednesday, that could be a huge thing for the Pistons. But we know this Stanley Johnson, that's someone who brings it consistently. So it's 13 games in. We're still talking about the same kind of questions that we did the night before the season started.
So when we look at Dwayne Casey so far, what are you seeing from him that has surprised you, and what have you expected, and what kind of job has he done so far with this group?
Well, the three-pointers, as far as being promised for quantity, have been there. I think they're in the top five of three-pointers attempted, but they're not knocking them down. Now, of course, that has probably more to do with the fact that the Pistons shooters aren't knocking them down, and that happens. Reggie Bullock is a notorious slow starter, so we'll see how that comes together. But I think Dwayne Casey's figuring out really as he goes in his coaching staff in a lot of ways too, because like you said, it's one thing to just say we're going to spread it out and shoot a lot of threes, but you also have to figure out how you're going to make that happen with your personnel. He has had Reggie Jackson off the ball a little bit with Blake Griffin kind of running the offense through him. That's been something that's not really worked out for Reggie Jackson as a guy who excels or does better when he has the ball. So it's been an adjustment for him, something that he's going to have to figure out. And the Pistons are going to have to figure out ways to get the ball in Reggie Jackson's hands also, because you got to play to your player's strengths. It's to say that it's an imperfect roster is probably an understatement, just because, you know, you bring in Blake Griffin on this big trade when you have this whole other completely different roster that was being put together by Stan Van Gundy. So it's an organization that's doing a lot of changing on the fly, trying to figure out a way to not just maybe sneak in as the eighth seed to the Eastern Conference playoffs, but use the fact that Blake Griffin, you know, looks like an Eastern Conference All-Star and could be, you know, a difference maker with this season as a whole in the NBA. So how do you kind of harness that and turn that into a team that, you know, is the next step or two above what that, you know, that baseline projection of being just out or just in the playoffs is. So, you know, he's got them playing hard defensively, but still, so did Stan Van Gundy. So we're still kind of waiting for some of these innovations and consistencies on offense that maybe we were promised with the way that Toronto played offensively last year.
So you look at Luke Kennard's obviously been out, so that three-point shooting, that doesn't make some sense. But the defensive end, this is a top-10 defense, and defense, obviously, we're going to rate that a little differently now because of the explosion of offense this year. But defensively, what has this team done that has allowed it to, even when scoring is up, this team still is a top-10 defense in the NBA right now in terms of per 100 possession stats. And what are some of the looks that you've kind of seen them throw at people?
Well, they're playing hard, first of all. I think that Blake Griffin and Reggie Jackson both being healthy coming into this year, healthier than they have been over the years, I think that's turned a couple guys that are minus defenders into something close to even defenders. I still say they're minus defenders, but Andre Drummond having less responsibility on the offensive end has freed him up to be the rebounder that he is, you know, probably the best rebounder in the NBA, and an improvement on the rim protection as well. And when Stanley Johnson, like we said, when he's hitting shots and he's playing with any kind of confidence offensively, which has been a problem throughout his time with Detroit, having him on the court is a huge benefit, because he's probably an underrated defender when talking about NBA standards, as a guy who, you know, should be mentioned. If he ever puts it together consistently for a season, he might be a guy you could talk about as an all NBA type of player defensively. I'm sorry, not all NBA, all defensive team NBA. So, And then you add Glenn Robinson. The fact that Luke Kennard's been out has probably been helpful to the way that the Pistons have played defense so far. You know, unfortunately, that's a truth of where Luke Kennard is right now. And Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson, that's where the Pistons have been susceptible, especially in prior years. And I think a lot of that is because of the schedule. They haven't played a lot of the top point guards yet. So when you get to some of those teams that might expose you in the backcourt, Kemba Walker went out and had a huge game against the Pistons. But there hasn't been a lot of those great point guards that we've seen so far with the schedule yet. So maybe that point guard might get exposed a little bit and might even out some of those numbers.
Wrap it up on this. What is something you're looking forward to seeing Monday night in Detroit? Cavs, Pistons, very different team for the Cavs from the last time these two teams played. What's something you're looking forward to seeing how it plays out on Monday?
Well, it's the first of a long homestand for the Pistons. They have one road game right after that, but then I think it's 6 of 7 at home, and a lot of them are these winnable games. Obviously, when you're a Pistons team, having the Cavs come into town, you expect that this would be a win. You could say the same for upcoming games against the Suns, the Bulls, and the Knicks. So this is a chance for the Pistons to really get a little space between them and the 500 mark right now and hopefully stay above that. So, but I'd like to see them knock down threes consistently. Obviously, we know teams shoot better at home, generally speaking, especially role players. So hopefully Reggie Bullock he's been up and down really bad at the beginning of the season, then up and down since then. Hopefully he can get things going consistently with the shot, and some of the other guys can get it going from three-point land still. And then Luke Kennard, certainly not back Monday night against the Cavs, but in another week or so, he should be coming back and really helping out those three-point numbers too.
Be sure to check out Locked on Pistons with Matt. It'll be, if you want the other side of this game, check that out on his podcast today. And then check out his podcast after the game as well. Matt, tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your writing as well.
Yeah, it's Matt_Schuch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that on Twitter, the Locked on Pistons Twitter account as well. And we put everything up on the Locked on Pistons -Matt Schuch Facebook account, S-C-H-O-C-H on Schuch. I was out at Michigan Stadium for football on Saturday, Pistons practices Friday and Sunday. Tonight I just got back from East Lansing for Michigan State, running Tennessee Tech out of the building with a 68-point victory, if you can believe that. So I'm all over the place in the state of Michigan, writing for the Detroit News and the Associated Press. And so all sorts of stuff if you're into Michigan sports.
Yeah, so give Matt a follow. Give Locked on Pistons a listen. Locked on Cavs will be back tomorrow, recapping Cavs Pistons and doing our weekly check-in on Jetty Austin. So for Locked on Cavaliers, I'm Chris Manning, your host. We'll talk to you tomorrow.